recording?
Yes, it is recording.
Remember.
So everybody can hear me right now, everybody that's going to hear this interview.
Uh-huh. This past fall, I took my kids on what is kind of an annual tradition for us, getting our yearly flu shots.
Elliot, tell us where we're going today.
This is Emerson.
Okay. We're going to get our flu vaccine at the nurse.
And that's Elliot.
Okay, I think it's called the doctor's office, but I'll take it.
It's something we do every year. But this year, with the coronavirus pandemic in full swing, things looked a little different.
So, Elliot, how do you feel about getting your flu vaccine?
Pretty scared because I don't want it to hurt.
To start with, we had to call and get permission to even go inside.
Hi, yes, we're here for a 315 flu appointment, or a flu vaccine.
And then once we got inside, we had to make sure the examination room was emptied and clean before we entered.
Hello. We have Emerson and Elliot for their flu vaccine.
It was only after we made it through all of this protocol that my kids finally got their shots.
Don't look.
All right. It's okay, buddy.
Because it looks much worse than it actually is.
Hey, why don't you look at me while it happens?
Ready?
See?
And we are done.
See? No big deal. How'd that feel?
It felt weird. It's like I'm getting like a medicine to make me cry and then my arm feels sore.
It might be sore for a day or two, but just keep moving it.
Alright, what do you guys
can
say?
Can I take this sticker?
Oh, yes, you can.
Okay, what do you say, Elliot?
Thank you.
You are welcome.
Thanks for this.
So much about this experience feels new. The check-in, the cleaning, the caution, the masks. It's like one fraught novelty after another. But the flu vaccine? That's actually quite old.
It's really that subtle changes and alterations of the virus that requires a new flu vaccine that is closer to what is currently going to begin to infect human beings this season. So
that's Dr. Stephen Hargarten, who in addition to serving as the Associate Dean for Global Health at the Medical College of Wisconsin, is also a friend of history.
I've been an longstanding researcher, teacher, and practitioner for many years here in the Milwaukee area, and I'm a proud graduate of UWM with a bachelor in history.
And what Dr. Hargarten points out is that the flu vaccine we get every year is actually the genetic descendant of the influenza virus that caused a global pandemic more than 100 years ago. An estimated 50 million people died during an outbreak between 1918 and 1919 of what was then called the Spanish flu. And while the flu has thankfully never been as bad as that period, the virus very much remains with us.
There's a distance there, obviously, of almost, it's 100 years. And of that, the flu, that virus changes a little bit each year. And that's why they have a new shot, vaccine that is closely resembling what the scientists foresee as the flu virus that's going to be infecting populations. So,
but that's not all the historical relevance that Dr. Hargarten sees. Because in addition to the biological connection between the 1918-1919 influenza pandemic and today, there is also a direct public health connection.
Well, I think it is important for students and families to recognize that given the newness of this virus to the human species, that the strategies for reducing the spread of this are pretty basic. As we saw in the influenza epidemic in 1918, that face masks were an important part of this. Mass gatherings were not a good idea. Those principles are still present today. Wearing a mask and social distancing and reducing crowds of people that gather. So it's so important to adhere to the basic premise that you're wearing a mask to protect yourself and you're wearing a mask to protect others.
We often like to think that everything we're going through right now is unprecedented and that the past is some distant land. But in reality, neither are true. In the same way that virus that killed so many so long ago continues to hang around, history is always with us as well. And while this moment might seem so scary and so new, this is actually one of the few times when history is quite literally repeating itself. Just a little over 100 years ago, the city of Milwaukee faced a public health crisis not unlike our own, as a highly contagious and infectious disease came to the city. Schools were closed, businesses shuttered, and people lost their lives. What might this history teach us about our own public health crisis? What can we learn from the experiences of people who went before us? And can we catch a glimpse of our post-pandemic future in the past? Well, this show hopes to provide some answers to these and other questions. Over the course of 7 episodes, we'll explore how Milwaukee experienced the 1918-1919 influenza pandemic. We'll talk about the backstory of the city's public health department, how schools and businesses navigated stay-at-home orders, and consider the ways in which this history is very much resonant with our own. From the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's Department of History, I'm Chris Cantwell. And in partnership with the Milwaukee County Historical Society, this is The Healthiest City. So the name for our show, The Healthiest City, actually comes from a book with the same name by historian Judith Levitt. And in this book, Judy points out that compared to a lot of other cities, Milwaukee actually handled the influenza outbreak really well. Though an estimated 30,000 city residents ultimately came down with the disease and around 1,100 people died, Milwaukee actually had the second lowest death rate in the country for a city of its size. The city was so successful in handling both the flu and other public health issues that observers called it America's healthiest city for a time. But this title did not come easily. One of the major reasons Milwaukee did so well during the 1918 influenza pandemic was because it botched the outbreak of another disease 24 years earlier. Conditions got so bad back then that there were riots in the streets, the health inspector was impeached, and the city ultimately redid everything within the public health department. And so we're going to begin our history of the Spanish flu where the story of Milwaukee's public health success really begins. The smallpox outbreak of 1894. Our pod historians, Olivia Hoff.
Hi there, I'm Olivia Hoff.
And Maddie Tabor.
Hi, I'm Maddie Tabor.
Have the story.
Actually, I think we should go back 40 years before the 1918 Spanish flu in order to get a more complete picture of Milwaukee's health department. In 1877, Milwaukee was a city on the rise, with a newly opened hospital and the public health department was at a high point.
Definitely. Milwaukee was growing and developing with a particular specialty in tanning and brewing beer. This is a time where some of the most popular breweries were created, with the likes of Pabst, Schlitz, and Blatt's.
And these booming businesses and the urbanization of Milwaukee attracted immigrants from Eastern and Southern Europe. These people were searching for the stereotypical American dream of a steady job and the ability to own a home.
However, the German and Polish immigrants came from an autocratic government, which led them to fear government control over their well-being.
And to point out, Milwaukee's public health department was at the mercy of the city's common council. So the fear of government control was a part of the German and Polish immigrants' reality.
The tension between the city's government and the immigrant population was already prominent. It then reached its boiling point in 1894 with an outbreak of smallpox.
The smallpox outbreak not only affected the health and well-being of the public, but it also showed the ethnic and class disparity throughout Milwaukee.
In order to fully understand the difference of class and ethnicity, it's important to note that experiences differed depending on what ethnicity a person was.
The German experience was more established in the middle class in the 1890s, since the majority of the population arrived to the U.S. years earlier. However, the Polish experience in Milwaukee was different.
Well, the Poles, who were the second largest immigrant group in Milwaukee, they congregated for the most part on Milwaukee's south side. Yeah, I mean, there's some people who said that you could, you know, spend a week in the south on the south side and hear nothing but Polish being spoken. And, you know, they were all very, you know, very Catholic. And so the churches, you know, St. Stanislaus and then St. Josephat's, the cathedral, I mean, were touchstones for the community.
That was Kevin Abbing, archivist at the Milwaukee County Historical Society.
Something important to mention is that the smallpox outbreak was centralized in the overly crowded Southside neighborhoods of Milwaukee.
These immigrants lived here in tenements. These spaces were tightly packed together with families living on top of each other. There were no alleyways, no backyards. Basically, there was no space for these people to breathe. These dwellings were also poorly maintained by their landlords and not regulated by city officials.
City officials like Walter Kempster, the health commissioner of Milwaukee. Here's Professor Judith Levitt, history of medicine and author of The Healthiest City.
But in 1894, Kempster didn't understand. He was just not willing to get to the level of the people where they were and try to bring them along to where he wanted them to be. And that was a big failing.
While he is scientifically correct in virus prevention, he did not properly help immigrant neighborhoods understand the need of vaccination and isolation.
There were two barriers between immigrants and the city health officials. One, the language barrier, for many German and Polish immigrants did not speak English. And two, the cultural understanding of healthcare. Many German and Polish immigrant families believed that you take care of the sick in your own home.
Kempster didn't even consult the churches to help spread awareness of proper public health procedures. This did not help diffuse the tension between immigrant communities and public health officials.
Immigrant communities, largely Polish and German immigrant communities, who were still quite fresh in the sense that they had themselves immigrated to the United States looking for freedom from what they thought of as oppressive governments. And then they come to the United States, and here seems to be another oppressive government saying you have to get vaccinated and we have to take your children to isolation hospitals. So their resistance came out of their own experience with previous autocratic, what they saw as autocratic government.
Kempster disregarded their cultural beliefs, and he began sending health officials to forcibly take children from their homes in the South Side to isolate them in the hospital.
This led the German and Polish families to fight back on August 5th, 1894. The Southside neighborhood started to riot.
These particular riots started, as I said, spontaneously. One health officer, an ambulance, came to one house and tried to take a child out, literally out of its mother's arms. And she was out on the street trying to hold on to this baby as they were trying to take her. And of course, all the neighbors around noticed all this and they all came to support her.
An important part of this story is that women, mothers, were leading the charge against the public health officials. They used what Professor Levitt calls domestic weapons, such as salt, pepper, rolling pins, potato mashers, anything to fight off the ambulance horses, doctors, and officials.
Once the riots calmed down, the public health department started writing health recommendation pamphlets in languages other than English. This helped slow down the spread of smallpox.
Also, the public health department recognized the need to communicate regulations clearly and create isolation policies that did not include force. The city of Milwaukee called for Kempster's resignation in 1895.
Public health is political, period.
After 1894, Milwaukee's public health department continued to develop. Just 24 years later, Milwaukee will be put to the test again.
Maddie Tabor and Olivia Hoff are master's students at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
Under 29, men and women sure were dying from a disease, what the doctor called a flu. People died everywhere, death went creeping through the air. Father groaned of the sick, sure was saying, it was God's almighty hand, he is judging this old land. North and south, east and west can be seen. Yes, he killed the rich and poor, and he's going to kill more. If you don't turn away from your sins,
Well, our show today was produced by Maddie and Olivia, with help from myself and the students of History and New Media at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. This episode featured material from the Wisconsin Historical Society, the Library of Congress, and the Milwaukee County Historical Society. Music for this episode is by Poddington Bear and the Blue Dot Sessions, while our concluding song is the Influenza Blues and comes from a recording held by the Library of Congress's American Folklife Center. Thanks this week go out to Dr. Stephen Hargarten for taking the time to talk with us, as well as to my kids for being such good reporters. And an extra special thanks this week goes out to Kevin Obbing at the Milwaukee County Historical Society, who helped us access the archive, and to Judith Levitt, whose book, The Healthiest City, gave us both information and the title for our show. The Healthiest City is a production of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee's Department of History and the Milwaukee County Historical Society. For more information, including photographs and documents from the era, check out milwaukeehistory.net/podcast. And thanks for listening. It was God's almighty hand, he is judging this old land. North and south, east and west can be seen. Yes, he killed the rich and poor, and he's going to kill more. If you don't turn away from your sin.
All right, Ellie, you want to hand the recorder to Emerson? Or do you have anything else you want to say?
That's all for me. Stay safe and stay curious.